First Fuel, a fortnightly podcast bringing you perspectives on the role of energy efficiency, energy management and demand response in the energy transition taking place in Australia and around the world. I'm Luke Menzel, CEO of the Energy Efficiency Council, and this week I'm joined by Bridget Carter. Bridget is Manager Energy Sourcing and Utilisation at BlueScope and also Deputy Chair of the Energy Users Association of Australia. Welcome, Bridget, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, Bridget, BlueScope's an $11 billion company that's been at the forefront of Australia's steel industry for, I'm told, over a century. That's a very long time. Can you kick us off by telling us a bit about BlueScope and the role that energy plays in the business?
Yeah, so BlueScope is Australia's largest steelmaking company. We've got, you know, over 100 facilities in 17 countries around the world. And we employ around 14,000 people worldwide.
Wow.
6,000, around roughly 6,000 of those are in Australia, with approximately 50 facilities in Australia. So we specialise in flat products. So that includes things like slab, hot rolled coil, cold rolled coil, plate, and also metallic and painted paint-coated products. Our production in Australia is about 3 million tonnes per annum. And as part of that, we're quite energy intensive, using, you know, around 1,200 gigawatt hours of electricity and 4 petajoules of natural gas per annum.
So where are you on the sort of the league table of largest energy users in Australia?
We're up the top there. One of the big ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Energy, obviously, very, very central to the business, primarily electricity use.
Yes. So luckily for us, our process actually creates quite a lot of process gas that we can recycle. So our natural gas purchases are just a small portion of our overall gas usage.
Look, BlueScope has been known to the Energy Efficiency Council for a long time because of how proactive you've been on energy issues, particularly in an early adopter of energy efficiency. And more recently, you've been very active in the market for renewable power purchase agreements. Is it fair to say that initial, investment and engagement in energy was really driven by cost?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the energy markets have gone through a rapid state of transition, and, you know, the cost skyrocketed back in, you know, the 2016, 17, when I took over my current role.
Good timing.
It was like my former boss, you know, hit a big red button on his way out. So, yeah, it became, you know, quite an important focus for the business. You know, we had enjoyed what was a relative advantage in Australia with low energy costs for quite some time, and that was very important to our competitiveness with regards to being in a commodity market that's global. So it was absolutely one of the drivers for why we engaged so much on the energy policy space, and were very engaged in energy efficiency, productivity, what we could do as a business to reduce our energy.
Would it be fair to say that as a business, BlueScope saw, I guess, the risk profile around its energy procurement go up, in, I'd say, certainly the last 5 years, but even the last decade?
Yeah, I think, you know, as the market changed, we saw the need to actually review how we procured energy, and in particular electricity. The changes to the market meant that, you know, the usual kind of lock it and forget about it, or, you know, very long-term contracts that were, you know, set and forget, were just not going to get us the right cost outcome going forward. So, yeah, it was a driver in a review of how we actually procured and how we interacted with the market, and what opportunities were there for us to engage differently and get energy costs out of the business.
So I guess a part of you managing that more dynamic market was getting more agile with the way that you approached contracting, and one of the outcomes of that has been the renewable power purchase agreements that you've entered into over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so when we reviewed our energy strategy, we also had a sort of a clean sheet of paper as to, well, what are the opportunities for us to do something in the renewable space. And that was, we wanted to do something meaningful, and we wanted to do something that was going to help with our costs, which is why we entered into the PPA that we did at the time we did. It was very much around doing what we could do with regards to incentivizing and underpinning renewable generation in the market, and underpinning, you know, the reduction of emissions in the grid, but also played a very important role in a cost down to our business when the business was suffering from high energy prices.
And I suppose stepping back a bit before that period, I know from our previous discussions over the journey, Bridget, that at that point BlueScope had already made some significant investments in managing its energy and reducing its energy load where there were cost-effective opportunities to do so. Is that right?
That's right. You know, we've got a long history of investing energy management, energy efficiency projects, productivity projects are all sort of embedded in our normal sort of business processes. So we've got really great tools that people can log all of their projects that they do, and we track, you know, the projects and the, you know, the impact that they have on the business. We've also got, you know, rigorous environmental systems where we have targets on energy projects as a focus as well.
Do you have a dedicated energy management system, or do you sort of manage it through one of your other sort of environmental management systems?
It's part of the overall environmental system, but it's very much embedded in environment as well as finance. It's a large cost category for us.
Yeah.
While I've got a dedicated team and we monitor and report on energy as such, and we also, you know, link that into emissions as well.
Yep.
The actual sort of then when it gets reported and presented to the business, it's embedded within, you know, both the environmental side of things as well as the financial side of the business and that reporting.
Well, as you know, Bridget, we spend a bit of time at the Energy Efficiency Council, I guess, trying to raise the profile of energy strategy as an issue with corporates in particular. But for a business that's as energy intensive as BlueScope, I'm sure you never have any trouble getting into the board papers.
No. Our energy contracts are reasonably material, and they're quite it's an interesting discussion. You know, the board are a great bunch of people, and I really enjoy sort of engaging with them on the topic of energy because it's such an interesting topic. Anyway, but yes, I've met with the board a few times in the last few years.
Yes, yeah, I can imagine that. Well, where were some of the big opportunities? So, you know, over the years where BlueScope has found itself able to save big licks of energy.
I think really it's about making really good use of what we've got and also challenging the status quo. So we've had a number of projects where we have, as I mentioned, we generate process gas from our process, so coke ovens and blast furnace gas. And what we've sort of been focused on, and some of our biggest projects and biggest wins have been around trying to utilize as much of that gas as possible. We had a project a few years ago now where we recommissioned a steam alternator that actually soaked up a lot of that gas. So we were able to then, you know, use something that was that was an waste process gas and generate electricity from that rather than drawing additional electricity from the grid. The generator itself was about 12 megawatts in capacity, and we really run that as hard as we can. It's got, you know, benefits for, you know, reducing emissions, and also for reducing our reliance on the grid as well. There's been quite a raft of projects, and the, you know, the New South Wales Energy Savings Scheme has been really great for incentivising a lot of projects as well. Mm. Around, do we really need to run that fan all the time? Can we just turn it on when we need it? Do we really need two fans? Mm. Can we upgrade equipment so that we get better energy efficiency? When you've got such a large site and such a sort of focus on cost and energy cost, yeah, we've been really great at sort of eking out those sort of opportunities. And I'd say, you know, the energy savings scheme has been fantastic in actually incentivizing that even further.
Mm, it sounds like a really keen understanding of the company's sort of processes around production and a willingness to sort of look at it with a fresh pair of eyes. Say, well, you know, we've always done it like this. The production line was designed this way, you know, however many years ago. Does it have to be that way? And can we make it more efficient or make it more productive? That can be hard particularly when you've got such a massive operation. And, you know, there's obviously an interest in managing energy costs, but there's also an interest in just making sure that you're pushing your product out. And so, you know, is that a culture that's always been there around sort of being a willingness to embrace those opportunities, or is it something that's developed over time?
No, I think it's just built into the BlueScope culture. Mm. Everybody's got the same opportunity to really make a difference. The systems are built so that, you know, people have responsibility for their area, and there's ways and means for you to flag projects throughout the business. So we're not sort of relying on, you know, one person or one department to go around and identify opportunities. We're really relying on the guys that are at the coalface to come up with ideas and new ways of thinking and drive those sort of opportunities up.
And you mentioned the role of government programs in kind of supporting projects that might not otherwise take place. Are they important in terms of, you know, focusing the mind? Is it the financial incentives? Is it the collaboration with, you know, external experts that sort of raise things up the agenda? What particular role do they play?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of energy savings projects do stand up on their own, but there's, you know, occasionally you'll come across one that's a bit challenged as far as the economics, even though it makes, you know, good sense. And there's always constraints on capital as well. So that's where those sort of government programs really come into their own, where there's something that's an awesome idea. It's going to give you those year-on-year savings, but you just can't get over that hurdle, that financial hurdle to get it in the list and competing with other things for the same capital. So I think, you know, that's where, you know, governments play a really vital role. And I suppose that's only going to become more important as we're sort of transitioning to sort of lower emissions technology that can sometimes be quite capital intensive and difficult financial case to put up.
Yeah, the thing that, as you know, Bridget, we work across all sectors of the economy. We do a lot of work in industrial and in the building sector, as our members do, and the the thing that always strikes me about in the manufacturing space, the industrial space more broadly, is it's not like buildings in the sense that buildings are kind of homogenous. Like there's challenges in scaling up the technology, but the technology is relatively well understood, and the challenges around, well, how do you upgrade a few million homes in a major capital city. Like, that's one type of challenge. The industrial space, the technology and, the particular needs and requirements of businesses just vary dramatically from business to business, and so there's a much more of a need for, careful thinking about what the business needs are and how that technology is going to be implemented in a particular context. And depending, for the more ambitious projects, that can lower the degree of confidence that it's going to be a success as well. And so especially when you're getting into some of that bleeding edge stuff, that government support can be really important to kind of tip a project across the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Dealing with the business risk of leading edge technology can be really challenging. Mm. So, yeah, I think there's absolutely an important role for government to play in that area.
And, of course, you've had New South Wales Energy Environment Minister Matt Keane out at the BlueScope site relatively recently, sort of talking about the government's net zero plan and the big $750 million investment that the New South Wales government is making into reducing the emissions intensity of large industrial businesses. I think, was it your boss or your boss's boss that was running around with the minister that day? Did you happen to be on site?
There was quite a few of us running around with the minister. we're grateful for, for them to spend the time with us to understand the business. Yeah. I was there. My boss's boss, my boss's boss's boss was there.
Well, like us at the Energy Efficiency Council, when the minister rolls up, it's your job to be there, right?
Absolutely, and you take the opportunity to sort of showcase your business and the thinking, and it's a good opportunity to have a bit of a two-way discussion on policy.
Absolutely, and I think the New South Wales government is to be commended on their willingness to, start to talk about, what a net zero target. They've got a 2050 target as well as an interim 2030 target. What that actually means for different parts of the New South Wales economy, and it's harder for some sectors than others, which is probably a good segue into some of the other work that's, I think, come into more focus for BlueScope over the last several years, Bridget. Obviously energy is always important, but carbon and climate issues coming into more focus over the last number of years. Do you just want to unpack that for us?
It's a topic felt broadly across the economy. We're transitioning to a low emissions economy. There's no doubt about that. And, we'd be crazy not to be thinking about it. Mm-hmm. It's part of the way we do business. We really have a focus on, the communities that we operate in. They're our homes there. Mm. And we take our social license very seriously. So I think we've made some quite strong commitments in this area, one of those being the appointment of a chief executive in climate change. Mm. And she will run a dedicated corporate climate change function to help the business address the challenges. And we're also, working really heavily on the next phase of our targets as well. So we've already got a 1% year-on-year emissions reduction target that we've had in place for a few years now. And that goes, we've made that commitment out to 2030, but we're sort of looking beyond that now as to what we need to do going forward. What are our longer term aspirations and targets, and what's the strategy that's going to get us there, which will be released later this year. So lots of work going on.
Yeah, a lot of work. So steel, obviously, one of the oft-mentioned hard-to-abate sectors. Just give us a bit of an update and perhaps a primer for the uninitiated on the whole sort of the green steel. I know that we've talked about it a few times, but it's very reliant on a hydrogen supply chain getting up and running in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. The technology itself is still not at scale either. So we're relying on, you know, the solution for the technology to become at a scale that we can use. And we're also relying on hydrogen being economic, as well as, you know, the raw materials that go into using direct reduced iron as a process as well. So there's a lot of things that need to fall into place, and they're not ready at this point in time. So yeah, it's definitely the way that the steelmaking industry is moving. There's no doubt about that. But it's not a technology that we can pull off the shelf right now.
Well, it goes back. I mean, we were talking about it at a small scale in terms of process improvements to, you know, traditional steelmaking processes. The sort of transformational changes that would be required, both in terms of the production processes themselves, but also the energy ecosystem, the supply chains that sit around the steelworks. That's another level again, and I suppose would, you know. For industry, there's going to need to be, you know, quite a lot of direct partnership between industry and government to realise that very exciting, but, you know, challenging to realise vision, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the practical contributions that BlueScope is making to sort of charting those pathways is, of course, the Australian Industry Energy Transition Initiative, which is being led by our friends at ClimateWorks Australia, which is developing pathways to net zero emission supply chains. How's that work going? And is that starting to usefully unpack what that pathway from where we are now to that brave new world might look like?
Yeah. So the work with that group is progressing well. There's a few projects that are starting to emerge from the initial sort of startup work, looking at, you know, what those different hard to abate energy intensive supply chains and industries will need to transition. So our experience in the ETI has been positive. I think that's one of the areas where business really plays an important role, is in, you know, collaboration and, you know, putting your heads together to solve what is really a challenging problem.
And within the community of steelmakers, within that subset of industry, is there that sort of knowledge exchange going backwards and forwards between you and, you know, nominally your competitors, but obviously a shared interest in kind of, you know, charting a course into the 21st century low emissions economy?
Yeah, so we're a member of World Steel, which is really the peak body for steel internationally. And we have a number of sort of initiatives within that World Steel group where there's information flows around technologies and best practice, as well as, you know, the responsible steel certification stream as well, which is being set up, and we're looking to get Port Kembla certified in that area in the next year.
First Fuel is brought to you by the Energy Efficiency Council, a not-for-profit membership association for businesses, universities, governments and NGOs. The Council's mission is to unlock the potential of energy efficiency to deliver healthy, comfortable buildings, productive, competitive businesses, and an affordable, reliable, and sustainable energy system for Australia. To find out how your organisation can get involved, visit eec.org.au/membership.
All right. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about BlueScope. We've talked in terms of energy and in climate. Maybe coming back to energy, maybe more with your industry hat on. I know you're engaged with the UAA and you've got a lot of awareness of the issues that are facing energy intensive businesses across the economy. What are the emerging issues that are exercising the mind of businesses as we sort of, you know, enter and make our way through the 2020s?
Yeah, look, I think it's such a fast-moving space.
Pick five, Bridget.
I could be here all day.
I know. You could have just had a whole podcast just on that question, right?
Yes, indeed. I think the one thing that, if I had to pick on one thing in particular, and it's something that we've been sort of focusing on recently, and it's got a lot of airtime as well with the ESB and the likes of AEMO and those sorts of people, and it's around a two-sided market and wholesale demand response and demand response in general. Mm. And how do we actually get the value that sits at customer sites and through that sort of demand side into the energy mix, because I think there's a, you know, it's a lot of untapped value sitting there, and as the market becomes more and more dispersed in its generation type and more sort of intermittent with renewables, that I think demand response can play probably a quite a cost-effective role in managing the system.
Yep.
And so I think it doesn't necessarily matter what size your business is. I think there's going to be solutions that are fit, that will fit all different types of businesses, from, you know, large businesses like us, down to, you know, the likes of cold stores and things like that, that can potentially, you know, peak shave and think about how they cool things and what time of the day they do that. So I think that's one area where, you know, people should be thinking about what the value is that they can offer into that space. And I think that's going to be really something that's going to develop and be really interesting to follow as well.
Well, absolutely. As we rocket towards the launch of the wholesale demand response mechanism in October 2021, a long fought for reform, and one that you know, among many other organisations, the Energy Users Association Australia and the Energy Efficiency Council worked in strong partnership to get across the line. And what's your sense in the business community of, you know, you point to that opportunity of demand side participation, obviously, you know, generating a lot of value for the system, and also new value streams potentially for businesses. But you know, there's sophisticated businesses like yours that are very well informed. Are energy intensive businesses generally, you know, aware that this opportunity exists, and do we have a bit of a job ahead of us building literacy in this space?
I think there's probably two sides to it. One is the literacy. But the other thing is building fit-for-purpose mechanisms.
Right.
So wholesale demand response mechanism is just one mechanism, and it's not going to be a fit-for-all solution. So really, I think, you know, there's two sides. You've got the market bodies who need to recognise the different drivers and capabilities of the different size users in the market and the different types of users to be able to set up systems to facilitate that. And then you've got the user side, where it really does take a change in thinking and a change in how you view energy and production to actually get a grasp on, well, actually, I can actually turn off for a piece of time that's probably no longer than a breakdown that I would normally have to live through, and actually get paid for turning off. So it's a different mindset, but the one thing I would sort of preface that with is that, you know, energy users are not like generators. We do have a different driver, and really that driver is lowering energy costs, yep, rather than, you know, seeking to get revenue out of the market as a driver. So, and that will be fundamental to the way that the market bodies need to set up those mechanisms as well.
Which is why it's so important to have mechanisms which address those different scenarios and enable different types of businesses to participate in ways that make sense for their business,
yep,
that allow them to continue to be the business that they are, not kind of you know, bending them out of shape to provide some service to the electricity market.
Yeah. And provide value for that service as well.
Absolutely. Well, I've got one more question for you, Bridget. Obviously, we've talked a little bit about the historical efforts that BlueScope has made when it comes to particularly energy efficiency. But what is next on the horizon for BlueScope in terms of energy and resource efficiency projects? What are you excited about? What's coming down the pipeline?
I'm excited about lots of things.
I'm sure you are.
There's so much going on. The upside to being in a hard to abate sector is that there's also so many opportunities and so many awesome things that you can work on. And it's the challenge that sometimes excites me.
There we go. We could flip it, couldn't you? You could, instead of saying hard to abate, easy to find opportunities sectors.
They're not always economic. But it's exciting going fishing.
Yes, indeed. I can imagine. And I suppose you have your list internally and you work through the ones that make sense in the short term and you have the ones in the bottom of the desk drawer that you wait for the opportunity to get them up.
Yeah. I mean, we've got such a complex process and then you look outside in the energy markets and there's a whole heap of complexity out there. That offers a raft of opportunities, and so, you know, some of the projects that, you know, excite me the most are the ones that give us multiple different benefits. So, for instance, looking at the way we can offset the use of coal with biochar. So it's a project that's very much in its infancy. The biochar supply chain doesn't exist at this point in time in the scale that we would need to do that project. But it's, you know, it's one of the larger abatement projects that we've got on our list and we're working on. And, I mean, not only do you sort of offset the use of coal, but you're diverting waste timber from landfill as well. So you get that win-win with regards to the biochar project. We've also got a project to even further increase our internal generation and soak up the last of our Indigenous process gases as well. Yeah. This is, again, you know, it's got the win of reducing our reliance on the grid, but it's an overall win for the fact that you're taking some of that congestion out of the grid as well. That particular project is quite challenging because we've done such a great job at using our process gases, there's not much left. So in trying to actually get the last little bit out of that, we've got spare capacity in that machine that means that business case is quite challenging. And I think this sort of ties back to, you know, government support. And we're sort of looking at whether some of the state government initiatives or the ESS actually make sense to get this project over the line, because what we do really well is once we've got an opportunity in front of us, we do really well at finding ways of optimising that. And so once you've got that alternator sitting on the ground and soaking up the fuel, every time somebody comes up with a gas saving project, that feeds that generator. And so it actually incentivizes the business to do more and more gas savings projects so that we can improve the business case on that generator, which is fantastic.
Virtuous circle, absolutely.
Yeah. And then I mean, the other thing that I'm quite excited about is, you know, whether additional renewable energy makes sense as well, whether we can increase the level of renewable energy that we have in our portfolio. And the challenge with that being a 24/7 business is how do you firm it? So really interested to see how the renewable firming market develops as well. And again, New South Wales government with their energy infrastructure roadmap and incentivizing and supporting some of those hydro projects in the state could really play an important role for large industrials that need 24/7 firmed power.
Well, Bridget, I feel like we could probably do another half an hour on all the other projects you're excited about, but we're out of time. I guess I just want to say that that tagline of hard to abate sectors, I think there's some in the community that see, you know, the companies that occupy those sectors as the bad guys.
Yep.
And I think anyone listening to this podcast today that had that view would have been disabused of it, in the sense that there's an incredible amount of work going on by very well-informed, passionate people like yourself that are grappling with these big challenges in a very serious way. And that's incredibly heartening. And I guess more power to your arm as you work your way through this process, thinking carefully about, you know, how we can work our way through that transition in the energy system in a sensible way, as well as, you know, holding on to, you know, our industrial base here in Australia, and hopefully grow it as we move towards a net zero economy. So thank you for your leadership, and thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, well, that wraps up this episode of First Fuel. If you have comments, you can find Bridget at her LinkedIn profile, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Luke Menzel. And to keep up to date on the latest in energy efficiency, energy management and demand response, you can follow the Energy Efficiency Council at EECouncil. If Twitter is not your thing, you can email the team. The address is firstfuel@eec.org.au, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to First Fuel in your podcast app of choice. And to learn more about the show, including upcoming live recordings, and we've got one coming up just in 2 or 3 weeks, so you should make your way to eec.org.au/podcasts. But for now, it's a goodbye from us, and we'll catch you soon.